Good morning, everybody, and welcome. Okay, again, good morning. Stephanie, would you call roll?
Joyce Still.
Here.
David Happ.
Here.
Cheryl Hanley Maxwell.
Here.
Mike Smith.
Here.
Deb Roush.
Here. Are there any additions or changes to the agenda?
Can I move approval of the agenda as written?
Second.
No.
You can't second.
Okay.
Can I do a vote?
Do we need a roll call?
No, just
okay. All in favor of the agenda, approving the agenda as presented?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, it's approved. Item 4, citizen input, public participation.
Can you use the microphone? Because if you say it, it doesn't exist if it's not on the mic.
So we're trying to stream this live on Facebook for CU Able. We're trying to find ways to get this a little bit more accessible to our constituents and all the constituents in the Champaign area. So we're kind of experimenting with the Facebook Live situation, and as we figure out if people are interested, then we'll try and add more features like closed captioning and stuff like that. But right now it's just kind of an experimental phase, but wanted to let everybody know that, smile, you're on camera.
Just for the record, would you identify yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Diane Gordon. I'm with CU Able. Okay. Thanks, you guys.
Dr. Fowler is with us today from the Mental Health Board. Do you have any comments or additions?
No, just wanted to, having been at the study session, do a follow-up and listen to your talk about priorities, since that's where we're moving to. Thanks.
Okay, approval of the CCDDB board meeting and study session minutes. They are on page 3 through 8. I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes from the October 25th meeting.
So moved.
Is there discussion?
Second.
I'll second.
Okay. Discussion? All in favor of approving those minutes as presented?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And then we also have minutes from the November 29th special study session with Ed McManus. It was a joint session with the Mental Health Board. Somebody like to make a motion to approve?
So moved.
Discussion. Okay, all in favor of accepting as presented?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And those are approved. Okay.
Deb, while we're going to talk about the funding priorities that may be the result of some of the things that Ed had to say, will we have a chance to talk about some other issues that might have come up?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I just wanted to say my only comment is as a follow-up to Ed's presentation on the 29th of November is that it really served to highlight to me how daunting our funding environment is, how complicated our systems are, and also how fortunate individuals of Champaign County with disabilities are to have funding that isn't available to others in the state who don't have a developmental disabilities board. So that was really all I wanted to say, and I'll leave the discussion of priorities as a follow-up for later on in our meeting. Okay, Lynn.
I'm going to try not to freestyle. I actually brought notes. So, can't read them. So in the study session, I think I felt really happy about the study session. I was really grateful that you talked to us earlier about the Facebook live stream, because then the county did a live stream video, and that was the first time we've done that, and it was nice. Rose Panapinto was here, an American Sign Language interpreter, and that was a really good experience for us. So I'm really grateful that you brought it up, and that helps us to learn how to have more inclusive and fully participatory meetings too. I need to talk to the county about the practicality of doing that on an ongoing basis, or when maybe we just start with special events and study sessions. And so anyway, thank you for that. And one thing that Ed wasn't real clear on that we feel really strongly about, and it's related to in early March, I'll go to Washington, D.C., and be part of a briefing on the Hill around some of the federal regulations and what we want as representatives of the DD world, what we want to make better for people. But in the federal regs, he's talking about the aspirational regs for integrated settings, which were supposed to be finalized. Each state was supposed to present a plan and make progress toward that and by 2019, and that's been extended to 2022. But some pieces of the new regulations are law, and those are conflict-free case management and person-centered planning. And he talked quite a bit about how those are being manifested in Illinois, but didn't mention that Illinois is doing that in order to be compliant with what is already law. And those are not requirements where the state has very much flexibility to create their own plan of what would qualify. They get, if the federal government doesn't like the way they're doing it, they get a corrective action plan at this point. It's not really as negotiable as the integrated settings piece. So that's some of that is included in our priorities document, our funding priorities document that you're currently using, and then the one that we've proposed for you to use for FY 19 or for program year 19. So I just wanted to be clear why we've included that it's because we're already operating in that environment. So then the next part is we are preparing, I think, next week, Kim and I have the last committee meeting. Is it the last committee meeting before the Capitol Hill briefing? So we're going to finalize some documents. I will be able to send those out to you, what we're going to say. And I think we're having some presenters to say it for us. The last legislative briefing that we had was mostly attended by association members and not legislators, so maybe we need to have better snacks. So that's coming up. We are working on updating all of the application forms, because the application for funding for program year 19 will go live January 5th, and this year all of the applications need to be submitted by the close of business, which is 4:30 p.m. for us, on February 2nd. So that's a much shorter application period than in previous years. We want to make sure everybody knows that. So January is all applications. And during that time, we can give technical advice. We can't really speak to the content of a program plan. So hopefully people are ready and the priorities document is clear enough. There's also, during January, February, and March board meetings, there will be some presentations from agency representatives who are doing something new this year. We did that last year, and I think there are only two new programs this year. It's again two, right? think so. Or yeah, I think so. So there is time if you want to have other agency program presentations or if agencies are interested in doing that. So we want to get those done before you start considering the applications for the next year. So then also, this last week, we've wrapped up our work with students from the university's Community Learning Lab. Kim had a group of students who were working on, were they paid internships for people, or just internships?
Community employment or internships.
For people with developmental disabilities. And you have offered to do to work on that again in the spring with a student group if a group expresses interest, which I think they have. So thanks for doing that work. And I believe Kim sent out the PowerPoint following that. I worked with a group of students who started out with a project to develop a pop-up health clinic, which might be a feature that could be added to an expo, since these boards happen to support a very well-attended expo each year. I thought a pop-up health clinic might be an interesting addition, or just to explore how pop-up health clinics would work in this community. A community of this size is not exactly well-positioned to do them. So the group kind of hit a dead end when they discovered how expensive it could be. And they worked on that, and then they switched gears and started working on comprehensive online resource directories and resource specialists who might reach into schools, especially schools which have a high number of children on free and reduced lunch. So that's where they ended it, and that piece will probably be continued in the spring as well, and I've offered to take that. Chandra is working with a student club who seek to support that group of artists that we work with in our Expo and Ebert Fest events, and they've got a whole bunch of things they're going to do. It's a marketing club from the U of I, so I thought that's a really great match for us. We do need help with the marketing piece. So they're going to be working on that. And meanwhile, I had submitted a grant application for for 2 years of support from the National Association of Counties for the artist group. And this would be workshops and a learning community that they could, there were two in-person requirements, and the rest are phone calls that, you know, would help them, help us as a group and help the artists learn how to market their work a little bit more effectively and be more connected to the community. We did not get that award. We found out yesterday that the final decisions were released because we don't have a formal relationship with the local arts council. So I thought this is kind of funny because that's one of the things we would hope to accomplish. So we'll keep,
Lynn, could you define a formal relationship?
We couldn't get them to sign on to the grant.
Oh.
So we'll keep trying to get them involved with us somehow. And the ultimate would be if artists that we have been supporting, who many of whom really either choose not to or maybe can't do it by themselves. To be part of something like the Boneyard Arts Festival or other of the large, you know, kind of wonderful art events in this community, if we can plug them into that with our support or whatever, just to have them be part of that, I think is our big goal. So that didn't happen, but we keep working on it. And I think that's all of my update. Oh, Chris Wilson, our financial manager, and Stephanie Hallward Gallo went to the quarterly state association meeting last week. And the session that they attended on value-based contracting, which is that's the important news in payment system overhaul across the country. The PowerPoint presentation wasn't made available, but it's supposed to be coming, and when it does, I'll share it out with everyone because that's important. It's a different way of contracting to incentivize valued outcomes and not just paying for services. So, okay, that's it.
Okay, the consultant staff reports are on page 9 through 31. Kim and Stephanie are here. Any comments from either of you about your reports or any questions from anybody else?
I'll be very brief. In my staff report, I included the second part of the Under the Microscope article regarding criminal justice and community care for persons with IDDD. If you haven't read those two articles, I recommend that you do. The first article, I believe, was included in my October board packet. They're very interesting and talk about, you know, crisis care for individuals involved in criminal justice systems, which I think is something that moving forward we need to take a serious look at. I think there is the issues with individuals with IDDD involved in the criminal justice system. I just don't know that we're aware of it. I know in my previous job we had a few individuals that were in crisis involved in criminal justice, and there was basically no services for that. So I think it's something moving forward we need to brainstorm about.
Okay, agency information.
Hi, I'm Kyla Chantos from CTF Illinois. I'm representing the Advocacy Center in Champaign. And I wanted to kind of talk about a new campaign that we're launching. It's More Like Than Different. We're doing it through StoryCorps. And for those who don't know what StoryCorps is, it's an organization that travels and collects stories. Stories to show our humanity and our connections and how we are more like than different. And then those stories are then cataloged and archived in the National Library of Congress so that they're always there for future generations to hear. This is something that we're really excited about. We're having a kind of a come-and-go event, Cookies and Conversation with Friends and Family, on Tuesday the 19th, and we'd like to invite everyone to come and spend a few minutes with one of our advocates and have a recorded conversation about a holiday memory or your holiday traditions and sit and have those conversations with cookies and coffee or hot chocolate. We were really, really sadly, we lost one of our advocates in October unexpectedly. But fortunately, what I was able to do is sit down with her and have one of those conversations with her about a week before she passed away. And we have, and it was, her title was The Day I Was Born. And so she talked about her being born with a developmental disability and how it affected her life. And her talked about her childhood and her relationship with her family and how blessed she is, how blessed she felt. So that is now recorded and archived in the Library of Congress. And I was able to play that for their family at her funeral. And they were just so, it was so touching. It was a wonderful opportunity. So we're really excited about this campaign. The advocates are all really, really excited and looking forward to Tuesday. I am working in coordination with the Champaign Public Library, and they're going to host an event, an evening event. We have to solidify the date. It'll be late January, early February, but we want that open to the public so we can reach a broader population of people and collect more stories. Thank you.
Good morning. Patty Walters from DSC. I had two things. One might be a little lengthy, but I know we're limited on time. I did want to share news just in case there's rumors or anybody's heard that one of our group homes is being replaced. We have a Lincolnshire group home that currently has two people, which isn't fiscally, you know,
doesn't work, and it needs so many repairs that we found that we really could not invest in the home. So we have purchased another home in Champaign. In fact, it's within a mile of that one, so it's not going to be a huge change for the people that live there in terms of transportation and access to the community, and identified two other people that will also be moving in. So right now, there's a lot going on at the state level with fire marshals and inspections, which I can share at another time if anybody's interested in that. So we're looking at January or probably February move-in date for that. Some of the work is being done now or starting next week for the fire marshal's requirements. So just didn't want to let anybody think that we were expanding or going in a different direction than having the Mahomet home the priority that it is. So that's more clarification. The other thing I just wanted to speak to briefly is, I've shared, and I know Vicki's had a lot of contact with Kim and Lynn about the new service reporting system. And it's not, DSC is not able to jumpstart or be as on board as quickly as we had hoped with that because of the size of the programs. And so I just wanted to explain briefly kind of what the challenges are with that. And mostly it was that we did not have a software or an electronic reporting system in place that could just be modified to accommodate the request and the changes that are being made. So fortunately, DDB has provided a consultant. His name is Alex Campbell, that has worked with us either in person through GoToWebinars and a variety of conference calls, phone calls, spent a lot of time with Vicki. We have several, each program gets reported differently, and so it's pretty labor intensive to create a, basically what he's doing is creating a spreadsheet that collects the information that our staff are going to input, and then behind that there's kind of a workbook that's also in Excel that will upload it directly into the system. So a few programs started reporting as of November 1st. There are several that the rest of them started reporting this month. Nothing has been entered into the system in terms of, the report that'll be, I guess, done in January. And I don't think that capability is available just yet for that. Or it's not. Is it online and live for the actual quarterly reporting? I think we're kind of in a learning curve for that. Okay, so just to give an example, FDC is probably going to be one of the easier ones because they're used to billing in a way that is similar to what's being asked from DDB. We thought in that was going to be one of our biggest challenges because currently they already have to enter the information twice, once for our purposes and once for the state, and we thought this was going to be a third data entry for the same service for a lot of people, and Alex was able to, a couple weeks ago, come up with a way that we did not have to add a third. So that's significant. That's a lot of time consuming. We're concerned about the amount of data entry that needs to be done. We've worked it out that the business office is going to be entering some of it. The spreadsheets will be created by staff that are doing the direct service, and some will upload directly and others will be done by either program managers or Vicki Tolf maybe is going to be heavily involved in some of that. So there's lots of hands going into it, lots of training. All of our staff are being trained to document in a manner that fits the needs of both DDB and DSC. And just to give an example, in our integrated program, there's lots of more community activities happening. I'm going to share that during the presentation shortly. If somebody has several different things taking place in the course of one day and they're working with multiple staff, so maybe they have an activity scheduled in the morning, they come back to DSC at lunchtime, and they have another activity in the afternoon, the potential is there that three different staff will be working with them and three different staff will be reporting for them, and each activity will get documented for each person. So there's going to be lots of data entry to reflect the activity that's happening each day for each person, for each staff that's working for them. Community employment is probably, and apartment services are the first ones to get on board. Those two and service coordination all use the same spreadsheet, and that is going to be easier, I think, than the day program and community involvement stuff that's happening. So it's a learning curve for us. I think it was much more complicated than anybody thought it was going to be. We continue to do the quarterly reporting that we're doing right now, that we've been doing for years, so that that information is, you know, we're still tracking who's getting services, the service hours, and the information that was previously collected. But there will be some service reporting in January to reflect the second quarter activity, but it's not going to be for the whole quarter. We couldn't create and enter information and have a mechanism to do that. Vicki and Alex have been working closely together, and as they meet and discuss, you know, what service reporting needs to happen, what the services options are for each program, they've worked together to create the documentation resource for staff, and then Vicki trains, and then we set a date and they get started. That's being collected manually right now because not everybody is uploading into the system. So I don't know if that gives you kind of I just wanted to explain what there's 8 clinical programs. I had sent previously to Lynn and Kim kind of a timeline of the activity that has happened since August when we first met with Alex. That was probably a couple weeks ago, so there's been lots more activity in the last few weeks, and we're spending the afternoon with him tomorrow. So we're hoping to get all the kinks worked out. It's been really, I think, challenging for him. The IT and the clinical don't always talk well together. There's 2 totally different languages almost. And he's done a good job, but it's been very confusing. You know, there'd be one spreadsheet that would be for service coordination. When we'd get it, it would have all the apartment services people on it, so we'd have to do some changes. Other challenges is not everybody has RIN numbers. That was going to, I think, something he was going to do with RPC, and that didn't happen. So we had to manually look all that information up and also gather that for some people that didn't have one. And then the insurance information is another. Most people, you know, have state benefits, so there's not going to be a lot of people that have private insurance, but we're also gathering that information at this time so that that'll be accurate and gathered and reported, I think, quarterly for that piece of it. So it's a big undertaking. I'm excited about what reports can come of this once we kind of talk about this new process in past tense. I think there's going to be some useful information for all of you, and also information that we'll be able to use to really track direct service and you know, just a lot of information that we may or may not collect right now or collect it differently. So, yes, ma'am.
How does this, it sounds so time consuming. How does this impact actual service that is being given? It seems to me that, you know, that information is always good to get, but is it in fact harming, that might not be the right word, actual direct service to people that are there? Because it sounds like almost every staff member is having to report something on a daily basis. And that has to impact service. At least I would think it would.
And I shared the same concern, and I'm not sure yet.
Okay.
Right now it's at a level where we're learning. I mean, Vicki really has been the primary person investing the time and energy to get everybody on board. Most of the meetings have been at the director and manager level, and then the training with direct service staff. I think it has the potential to affect that. But I don't know yet. And in part, I think part of it's going to be the learning curve. It's a lot like what's happening at the state level with the new person-centered planning process. It's taking a ton of time at the front end because it's such a new process, and there's lots of people involved. And that's really the same thing that's happening here. There's lots of people involved. I hope that it will get easier as people become more accustomed to it. The day program is probably the area that is not typically used to tracking time that way. The rest of the staff have been reporting service hours and direct service time, not necessarily in 15-minute increments, but have been tracking their time. So I think that's a good question in a couple of months. But right now, I think it's the learning curve, and I don't know that that's a realistic estimate of how much time it's really going to take people once they're used to the system.
We created a category they can use to report the time that it takes to report. Because this is a service to the consumers, too. This is, you know, we got the impression from the last round of applications that there are more requests for service coordination type activities, for linking people to services, than there are requests to fund services. And we keep seeing that the kind of services people report needing remain respite and speech therapy. And so it looked like we're starting to fund a system of people taking you around to get help as opposed to services where people would get help. So part of this is to report on what actual direct services are being delivered as opposed to the time that staff may be engaged in doing case management type activities, which is also part of the report. But we'll get an idea across the whole system of what your money is paying for, because it's starting to look like all agencies end up having to do a lot of that linkage to services. So within a service, they can report the time it takes to do data collection and reporting, which is the standard. We just, unfortunately, in Champaign County, we're a little bit behind with that kind of reporting system. So.
And what will we do with that data?
We'll be able to see how many people were actually served and what kind of services they actually did receive. So right now, there's a lot of duplication in the reports. It has taken me, at times, I've requested actual reports from all the agencies for about 7 years, and it takes a really long time to put all the data together to see where people are showing up for services. And when you look at it, it looks like there are people who kind of migrate across all the programs and seem to be looking for people to link them to things. So that looks a little bit problematic. Plus, it's very hard to answer the question how many people are actually being served without a system like this. And this is the standard. Typically, we've never had it here. But anyway, that's why we wanted to make sure that the agency can get paid for the time that it takes for staff to report on what they're doing.
And just, I think, to take that a step further, if you don't mind, I think one of the elements that is different is that the actual service options. It's not so much the service. It's itemizing more and kind of defining what kind of services are being provided in each program. So while that might take a little bit longer, I think it does give more of a picture of, you know, how much is being spent on travel program. I mean, I can't off my top of my head. What are some of the service options, Kim?
It's all what you wrote into the applications, which sometimes there's an emphasis on increased support for getting people medical services. I mean, that seems to be really important as the people that you serve are aging, that they need more and more help with getting to appointments and advocating for themselves. That's just a small example, but it's important to be able to see shifts like that over time too, and because that serves as a gaps analysis for us.
So are there any other questions? Yes, sir?
At some time, will you be able to tell us how much this has cost and how many of those dollars are not being used to serve clients but are being used to serve us? Because I think it's us that are requiring this, right?
Right, but it would be hard to do that because we don't have reporting from before to compare.
We don't know how much time they had to take to do it.
Right, but we don't know what... We've never asked them to quantify the services in this way before, so we don't have the ability to say how many hours of service were delivered to a person then compared to now.
No, I want to know how much it cost to implement this system.
Well, we've paid for that.
Not if their people can't serve clients.
But
that's what I want to know.
Right, but we wouldn't be able, we don't have data from before in order to make a comparison like that.
I wish I could come up with the right question. I think collecting data like that is important. I'm not against that at all. But what I am a little concerned about is that if there are three staff in different departments every day that are working with the same individual, it seems to me that they are, having been a teacher, let's just go there, having been a teacher before, data collection was a major part of being a special ed teacher, and I understand that. But I realize, too, that if I, as a teacher, am having to put down, I saw this student third hour on such and such a day for 40 minutes, and then I spend all kinds of time putting the data into something for a report, that doesn't always give me the information that, or anyone else, the information that I need to do a better job with that particular teacher. Now, I understand, a student, I mean. So I understand the collection of data. Does every agency, everybody that we fund, are they also doing that? And if they are, I would be really interested in just having a chance to talk with staff, maybe in a separate meeting where we all sat down and asked questions. I don't know what would work best. It's almost like we have to do data collection here to see how that would work. And that does worry me. It's not that I think that it's bad to collect data. What I do know, though, is the state of Illinois is actually not going to fund any disability at this point to the extent that they need to fund them. So if we are paying for our agencies to actually collect data as opposed to our agencies to actually be doing the job that they have to do, which is direct service, I'm a little concerned about what that ratio would be. So that is a problem that I think we do need to talk about. We're looking at a large number of people who are inputting data on a daily basis. That has to take away from their time on their job. So that's my concern.
There'd be a number then. Like, that's a query that you can do to look under that billing code, what the amount of time that people have billed for the time it takes to do the reporting. You should be able to query across all the programs. So then I guess that's that number against zero from last year, right? But we could, I imagine that people like Vicky could estimate the amount of time that they've spent on reporting in previous years as a comparison, but at least we could see for this year what it has cost or how much time people have put into the billing itself.
Excuse me, you said we're paying for this time, right? So then are we going to accumulate that time and move it from dollars spent on clients to dollars spent on overhead, so our administrative percentage is going to go up then?
No.
Well, why would we reflect these dollars as being spent on clients when in fact it's spent on gathering information for us? Not, isn't that what we're talking about here?
Well, you're right. So through our administrative budget, we have paid this year for the improvements to the system to allow this and for the trainings and supports with the agencies to get everybody on board with it. But we won't have to pay. That won't be an ongoing cost. The ongoing cost is in maintaining the system and running the reports. So that's true. If data collection is not related to quality of service, then this will have been a waste of money. But the idea is that if you know what you're doing with the dollars, you can actually describe it in the end of year reports. And we have never been able to do that. It took me about 3 weeks of doing nothing but combining names and hourly reports to come up with unduplicated numbers of people served across the system. And we were finding, it didn't really match up with what we thought we were doing at the beginning of each year. So it seemed to be important to find out what we're spending the money on. But you're right, it is money that was spent out of the same levy.
Okay, so I know, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I just have two questions. Is there narrative data required, or is it simply?
Do you want to? It's a combination, right?
It's not. Narrative data is not required unless it's a significant chunk of time that maybe would raise a red flag as to why 12 hours was spent in one day on one person. So they have the option of saying, you know, a briefcase note about, you know, individuals in the emergency room or, you know, house caught on fire, so case manager had to spend, you know, 12 hours with them. So it's an input of the time, and then there's a service option. And so those service options match across agencies and similar programs so that we can capture the similar services while everybody's services are not, they're not the same, but I tried to do them as similar as possible so we could see the impact that the services are having on the individuals served.
You also have encouraged agencies to continue using the comments section where they can build a narrative if they want to celebrate accomplishments or what they're doing that may be innovative or surprises that, right? So, okay.
So basically the whole idea is that we are, the data, the information is coming directly from the provider rather than you having to just put all of this together over weeks of time in the end, and you're getting better information.
Yeah, better information too. Yeah.
So it should really, in theory, streamline.
And be accurate.
And be accurate.
That was the other concern.
And we're hoping that it shows exactly what each client is getting, what service. And I know Patty and I had a discussion about individuals who receive personal care from the providers and how lengthy that can be, and that isn't captured anywhere. You don't see that service is provided to those clients. So we actually have that service option. Sometimes it can be combined. It can be hours of an individual's stay if they, you know, are taken for personal care in the morning, after lunch, and before they go home. You know, that can be 3 hours of time in some cases. And so we wanted to be able to give the agencies the options to show, like, this is a service that this individual really truly needs, and we're providing it. But it, in a regular report, it's unknown. So it's so that we're able to look at a client and see exactly what services they're getting throughout a day, a week, a month.
And thank you, Patty, for providing the detail. I really appreciate hearing that. When we embarked on this system, we thought this was going to be so easy because Kim based all of the service categories on what everyone wrote in their applications. And then also, this is a system that's in use in a lot of other communities across the state with DD programs. And in all those places, they got such positive feedback from the agencies when they started using it. Like, agencies loved it. So we thought, maybe the agencies will love it. Well, that's been true in many cases, but I know for you all, it has not been love, and I'm really sorry.
It might be one day. I don't.
I was expecting this would be an improvement for all of us and would help with, you know, I was asking for lots of extra reports throughout the years, and that I thought was a hardship compared to just straightforwardly basing the reporting on what was in the application. So I'm really sorry to have had high expectations.
I don't think we're looking for an apology. I mean, I didn't come in, I hope, that I didn't come in wanting to sound defensive. It was more of an explanation of why this is taking so long. And the main thing is that there are so many more people involved in the reporting of it than what we traditionally have done. And long term, you know, I would hope that this will replace some of the reporting we're currently doing, but I'm leery of stopping that at this point until we know that this is going to be, you know, exactly what you want and something that works for us kind of, you know, simultaneously. So again, I think change is hard. You know, it's not really that different compared to what we're doing with transforming day program from an in-house program to community. We're doing both of those at the same time while we're doing this transition, and it's really complicated with not having extra resources to do that. This feels very much like that. When the state makes changes, it takes a really long time to get that going. You're doing two systems at the same time, and hopefully in the end, that's not the long-term outcome. So the one thing that I think got said that I don't think that we will probably need to track ourselves, The direct service is going to track some of that activity about the reporting, but we don't right now have, like, the business office and Vicky's time and people that aren't doing direct service. That's something that I think that we can kind of keep track of a little bit. We kind of do have a gauge for how much of Vicky's time or the directors have been doing the reporting in the past, because they've been the ones charged with providing the quarterly information based on existing databases and stuff. So, I don't know. I mean, right now, yes, it's taking more time. Will it in 6 months? I don't know. We may grow to absolutely love it. It may be exactly what you wanted and really easy for us, but the transition is challenging, and we've been working through that together, and appreciate the support from Alex and from Kim and Lynn. So we'll see. I'm sorry that ended up being such a lengthy discussion. So thank you.
Any other agency information? Okay, financial report. On page 32 and 33, the expenditure approval list is done.
Move we approve.
Discussion? All in favor of approving?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Item 12, new business. Item A, successes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Annette Becker from DSC.
And Becca Obachowski from Community Choices. Sorry, I'm very hoarse.
Oh, great. I think I can handle talking.
Oh, good.
That's one of my strengths, unfortunately. So we've been providing training for businesses on disability awareness through our LEAP program. And in early November, we had a focus group of businesses to really see if this program is effective and helpful in businesses embracing hiring people with disabilities. I'm getting your hoarseness. And it was a lot of work pulling it together, but afterward, I think we all felt very energized. We had Jim Mayer from the schools be the moderator. Becca and I just sat quietly let the business community really talk about how they can support each other. Some of the things that came out of it, starting next quarter, we'll be doing a quarterly newsletter for businesses, and it's, again, looking at things like accommodations or success stories of businesses who have hired people with disabilities and how much those individuals have contributed to their company and just the whole environment of their business. And then we also talked about lunch and learns, having quarterly lunch and learns as well for the business community. And I think what was really reinforced for me is what a great business community we have. We have some businesses that we've really developed longstanding relationships with, and they're invested in this process with us, and so that was pretty encouraging.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on that too, I was also really impressed with how much desire there was on behalf of the businesses, at least who were there, in continued engagement in the LEAP process and continued engagement with us, and really, you know, looking at ways to help, you know, themselves and the rest of their staff continue to be sort of knowledgeable about what an inclusive workplace is, what kind of, you know, supports that they can offer to continue to sort of be leaders in that area. And so that was, as Annette said, very energizing in figuring out some of the ways that we can continue to do that and know that businesses would be enthusiastic. So, yeah.
And then the other thing with LEAP is just last week alone, we had 80 people participate in the LEAP training, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
And then just one DSC thing. Our Enactus group, the Enactus group from the University of Illinois has helped three individuals that we support start their own business, and it's called Got You Covered, and it's T-shirts, hats, mugs, you name it, and they've already started getting requests. So the business is up and running, and we're looking forward to big things from that group.
And I'll just pop in a couple things about community choices. Also, I'm actually meeting with the Enactus group this afternoon to talk about some potential partnerships for the next semester and potentially on into next year with some other small businesses, or at least some sort of business training classes and opportunities for some of our self-advocates. We also recently just started a partnership with the Jubilee Cafe, which is a, I hesitate to call it a soup kitchen, but it's a food resource for individuals, students, as well as community members who might have a food need that takes place in the basement of the UCC church on campus. So we have partnered with them as an opportunity for some of our self-advocates, as well as some of the family members that are in our co-op, to continue to sort of connect with each other and connect with the outside community. They have really created the cafe as an opportunity for people to have sort of an inclusive way to you know, to come together to provide support, you know, in the vein of food, but they've been very excited with how much sort of integration there is between the different types of people who show up and how the great diversity that's there. So we're really excited to be a part of that. And we also, it's funded through the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities grant that we have. We are just starting a project called Community Conversations, and we have sent out invitations for a core team of self-advocates, which is both people who are involved in community choices as well as a few people who are self-advocates who receive most of their services through DSC, to be members of we're actually creating it as a board of directors, where all of those individuals will make the decisions, sort of, and hear information as much as you guys do about how to sort of move forward. Our first sort of push is to focus on trying to provide some information and connect with the medical community about allowing people with disabilities to sort of have a greater role in their medical care, and to sort of receive the respect and the information that they need in the ways that they need it when they go to their doctors or other sort of medical providers. So we're really excited about that moving forward.
DSC is here today to discuss their path planning process. Information is on page 34 through 52. Okay,
I'm back. So I am going to just kind of go through a lot of activity that's happened in the last year and a half. And the main focus is going to be on the time that we spent with Dr. Brian Daig from the University of Vermont, who went through the PATH process with us as an organization. What was in the packet? I don't know if it's in the same order, but the very first packet, part of the packet was the PATH planning process, and I won't go into that in great detail because that really explains kind of what the process is and isn't necessarily DSC specific. But it basically encourages participants to visualize a future based on shared values and beliefs, and it's a creative process for strategic planning using graphic facilitation to help individuals or organizations identify their vision of the ideal future and develop a plan for achieving that. So you've heard Vicki Nyswinder talk about the PATH planning process on an individual basis for people and families. And then this is the same process that Dr. Daig used to help DSC kind of walk through. And our two primary areas that we focused on during the year with him was culture change as an agency, and then employment and community-based services. So that's a lot of great information that just talks about the dialogue that we had on page 4 of that section. It's called Touching the Dream or the North Star. Again, some language that maybe you've heard before. This is kind of bullet point highlights of 2 days of kind of brainstorming session with Dr. Daig, all of our clinical directors, CEO,
the upper management, along with our program managers and representatives from each program in terms of direct support staff and and queues. So we had several queues, but not, I don't think we had the entire team, but I can't recall. So that happened in November of last year. So the idea was reducing center-based services with people receiving services more in the community rather than going to DSC. A simple change that we would like to see happen, we aren't able to do it legally, but we have tried for a long time to try to just reduce the name to DSC. Developmental services and center, I don't think really truly reflect what we do anymore. So in trying to demonstrate that, we are not necessarily a place you go to, but a service that you receive or a support that you receive. So calling ourselves DSC and kind of trying to change that a little bit on stationery and documentation and stuff is going to be kind of a big undertaking. But changing the name completely, we can't do it legally because lots of different versions have been tried and they're all taken. They have copyrights or patents that are for a length of time. So anyway, you hear us, and the name recognition, I think, in the community is more DSC. It gets abbreviated more than not. But that's just kind of a simple thing that that we don't feel like the three words put together really represent what we do so much anymore. I did notice one error throughout the document that I'm not positive that I changed before I hit send, and that is that DSC started in 1972, and he made a couple of references that the dates not correct. But things like employers reflecting reflecting a percentage of the disability population, trying to reduce group homes to no more than four people. There's been a lot of activity in that in the last few years. People, in the community, we feel know what DSC is, but not so much what IDD is unless it touches them personally. So trying to really help with stigma and name recognition, but more about promoting the population and the contributions that they can make as citizens, and not different than what was said earlier, is that we're more alike than different. Change lower expectations of people and families. In the past, DSC was kind of the go-to place, and people would want to go there and get all of their needs met, and I think we were really responsive to that. There are other options available, and this is when I referenced earlier the transformation. We have two different things going on, and part of that is generational and historical. We've got a lot of people that have been with DSC for a long, long time, and families and individuals that have relied on us for services and continue to want that same thing, or that are aging to the point that maybe employment opportunities are not something that is going to be a realistic option. So one thing that has happened is we've created kind of a next step program, which is for people kind of in that senior retirement age group, that, more social and, relaxing activities and things that they can do in the community and connect with other senior groups. So that's, that's one way to kind of bridge that a little bit. But also we've still have people coming to DSC that are asking for that same service, but we also have lots of people that are coming wanting something different. And I feel like we're being responsive to that by not making the assumption that anybody wants all day services or that they can have them. That people, we want to be a part of a support system for families and for people that are wanting services, not the support system. And so families and students coming out of high school and the community in general are looking at disabilities differently because they have worked alongside them. They've been in classes and school together. It's not quite as separate as it had been in the past. So they're growing up with siblings in their home and in their classes that have disabilities, and so that tide is turning, and that transition piece is something that we're all concerned with, not just in Champaign County, but nationally when you talk about what's happening with the schools and adult services and bridging that gap. So I think it's more of a partnership, and the families are taking on more responsibility and preparing for life post-graduation and wanting some support and not total support. So, being responsive to that is something that we needed to do. Young families are looking for support and expertise. Only people with disabilities transition from high school. The rest just move on. So even kind of that, the way that it's described is kind of still an us and them. So trying to dispel that a little bit. So this kind of walks through lots of things that we talked about and things that led to the actual final report and some of the activities that we've had. So without going into a lot of depth in that part, if you look at page 6, sensing the goal and the focus for the next 3 to 5 years, it's broken into culture shift. So name change, branding issue, image is good, but trying to get past people thinking that that all we do is traditional services and that you go to DSC for traditional services and you go somewhere else for something else. I think that the community has a lot of great resources for people with disabilities and that we work together. There's times that we compete and there's times that we collaborate and there's times that we're, you know, providing services jointly. And that strengthens our ability to be responsive to the needs in our community. Generation gaps that I discussed and changing expectations, basing services on the person's goals and dreams, the cultural change and staff training, building social capital, and you know, one of the things that, again, we also have that generation gap a little bit with staff. We've got a lot of people that have been with the organization for a really long time. And also the demographic of people that come to DSC to work. A lot of times it's, you know, they're people that want to help people and want to take care of people. And trying to shift that from working with someone as opposed to taking care of someone is something that, you know, is changing. There's nothing wrong with wanting to take care of people if they need that. But, you know, the majority of people, the goal is for them to be as independent as possible and make sure that we're fostering that and not holding them back. Educating staff and individuals and families about community connections and volunteering, identifying community connections in the personal plan, demonstrating that connectivity, talking about the funding issues that you guys are familiar with and that we all kind of live and breathe daily, working through the personal outcome measures through CQL. Self-advocates, you know, have really become a lot more involved in the joint activity with Community Choices is a great next step. So, you know, we, like I said, we're aligned in a lot of things, and other things we kind of do independent of one another based on what the people that we're serving are wanting us to focus on. Communication probably is 95% of every single problem, whether it's personnel or service delivery or whatever you're talking about. So really trying to do a better job of establishing a solid communication plan for staff and families as we make the changes. You know, trying to write plans out in phases. And monthly communication to families and staff regarding changes are some of the ideas that we have. So there's several pages of kind of the brainstorming and being really honest with kind of where we were a year ago in that point in time and where we want to go. You know, some of the things that I thought were worth, you know, just highlighting was that we've been talking for a long time, but ideas and changes don't always come to fruition. We all know why that happens. It's time and funding and things that, you know, need to kind of fall in place for us to make some of those changes, and stakeholders aren't always aware of the work that's being done. Wishing that things could happen faster and feel good about changes. I think that Lynn referenced earlier that, you know, there's space in the notes for us to be able to talk about celebrating some successes, and I think that we've gotten better at that. I think in the past, you know, you kind of know that good things are happening, but you're kind of working on the next thing all the time and really kind of taking pause and celebrating what staff are doing, what the individuals that we're serving are doing, and being able to promote that. And I think if our website has done a better job of really kind of sharing some of those stories too, there's a segment that gets done periodically called Meet Me on Mondays that is an interview with somebody. And there's some really nice stories. If that's something that you want to check out, I would encourage that. Not seeing community response, the LEAP certifications has been significant, and the growth that's happened in 2 years with that program has been fantastic with outreach to businesses. Even in terms of, you know, you might go into one business that there's only 4 employees or have a presentation like last week where there were 70 or 80. That's huge. And each time that happens, you're opening a door for someone, you're establishing a relationship or strengthening one, and getting word out, you know, on a large scale in the community. And that business piece is, to me, a part that's kind of missing at the state level. So it's really cool that we're able to focus on that, and that is absolutely a direct result of the county funding. Transforming the agency, decision-making. I mean, I just wanted, you know, we're a mission-driven business, but also have to make some difficult fiscal decisions at times, too. And sometimes, again, alignment. Sometimes that happens and sometimes it does not. But the goal is to be as efficient and serve as many people as we can in the way that they are asking for support. And then the last couple pages in that is identifying people to enroll on the journey. Lots of resources that Brian and our management staff came up with, and those are things that are solid next steps. We've made some connections, but that's something that we really need to kind of dive into over the course of the next year or so. So then the next piece was actually Brian's final report.
We did reverse those documents in the packet.
Okay.
So if you're looking at the board packet, that one's first.
Okay. So I'm just going to, I really want to talk about some of the stories, because I think that that's what you want to hear and that's what's really important. So I'm going to breeze through kind of the report since you have that. But it talked about the major themes of the two-day path process, the historical message, future services. Younger generations of families affected by disability generally have different expectations or are looking for more community-based inclusive services, similar to what I just said in terms of the bullet points outlined in the path. Community perspective, again, as a result of inclusive education, children without disabilities are growing up with children with disabilities and seeing them in a different light with different expectations, too. And this generation represents current and future employers and coworkers willing to include people with disabilities. So that's kind of naturally happening, and then we want to foster that. Community support. The first sentence there says there's less need for disability service systems when community is providing support. I struggle with that one a little bit. I think there's less dependency on it, but the fact that that can be non-existent isn't very realistic. So I think this disability service system is changing, but to see that collapse would be devastating too. There needs to be a fallback. There needs to be a system of care. There's people with all different kinds of levels of support needs, and it makes no sense to assume that everybody should be in a sheltered workshop any more than it makes sense that every single person is going to be working full-time with benefits in the community. So there's a gamut there of services that need to happen and a shared responsibility with families and people being served in the community and providers. So the next page just kind of outlines some of the things that we did. I think in the year since the PATH process was developed, Brian indicated that major accomplishments in transforming their services have been outlined below. A number of training seminars for staff and families regarding the transformation process. There's a list of staff training that has happened over the course of the year. This is stuff that that we either scheduled or sent people to. It's not all inclusive. This really does focus on person-centered planning and employment. Family informational meetings, there's a list of several sessions that have happened over the course of the last year, and actually the last two through the eFirst grant. A few of those sessions have been repeated because the audience does change a little bit, and we have more success stories to share. So the next section is about self-advocacy. You hear routinely, I think, through the addition on the board agenda about some of the transitional successes, and the advocates have attended the Speak Up, Speak Out Summit for years, have become presenters at that event, which is a huge step forward. There's a wall of fame at, we don't have any firefighters in the program just yet, the wall of fame for employees, which was really cool. The first time that, first time we added the picture of somebody that's working in the community, it's kind of instant celebrity, and they become an example and model for other people, and it's very motivating. And I think there's 8 to 10 on that wall now, and people are kind of like, when do I get my name up there? When's my picture going to be up there? And so there's some cool things happening that it's working, and it's a great way to celebrate their successes. Job Club is something that has started. It's a 12-week course for people to explore their interest and desire in employment and to learn some soft skills. And I'm going to talk about some of the success stories with that in a minute. Identifying people for the next step program I already spoke to, that's looking at seniors as they kind of age out of some of the activities that they've participated in and don't necessarily, have the stamina to do a lot of the community activities that are happening. So those are examples of wanting to bring the community into some of the things that we do.
Community and business partnerships, ENACTUS has been discussed. You guys are very familiar with the CROW at 110. You know, I saw in the last meeting minutes for this meeting that it referenced the three art groups that have started. What's significant about that is it is using this space, and there are some amazing things happening. So ENACTUS is using the space. The art groups are using some space. And right now they're working on a mural that six people are doing different panels for that they're going to be putting together that just kind of puts together some different mediums. And we've got some people participating in the impasse. They've found their passion. You know, there's been a few people that we have offered a variety of services to, and their interest has not you know, really been in those areas. And so to see them diving into this with a passion and being really creative and knowing that there's something that they can actually provide and do out of that and maybe, you know, a source of income at some point is really cool. We talked about the LEAP. I think you hear about that routinely enough. At the end of October, beginning of November, we submitted a Think College grant. The proposal was submitted on 10/27 with the goal to establish a regional coalition in Champaign County to examine the issue of post-secondary education, including college for individuals with IDD. Unfortunately, we did not get that grant. So we've heard now, I want to get emails out to people that provided letters of support for that. We had one from the University of Illinois. We had one from Lynn here with DDB and MHB. There's interest in our community in looking into this, and in the response that I got back from the Think College grant entity is that they will be contacting us soon to talk about other ways that they may be able to support that. It's not something that's offered annually, this grant, so that's unfortunate. But Brian Degg did a great job, and he has some really good connections. So I don't think that that's necessarily something that gets tabled or goes away. I think we need to continue to be steadfast with that, and I look forward to hearing from them. So we did appreciate the letter of support from the board and the staff. University of Illinois, Annette Becker and Brian Degg met with Dr. Chun-Yi Chu and Dr. David Strausser from Rehab Counseling Department to discuss increased partnership, which is one of the things that led to this this grant application. And, you know, we're looking at really hoping to strengthen the relationship with both U of I and Parkland in the coming year. Then there's some new some administrative tasks. This overlaps a little bit with the FY program review that you have. There have been no new admissions to Sheltered Workshop at Clark Road for over a year. It's probably closer to 18 months at this point. You know, that's huge, especially when we've got people asking for that service. But, you know, we are rethinking what people are getting when they come to DSC and what they're wanting and trying to be responsive to that. Rantoul site closed. That was more of a fiscal decision, but we were able to maintain services for everybody that was currently being had DSC as their primary service provider. At one of our buildings, which is affectionately called McKinley 3, work was discontinued in that building on October 1st. Lots of struggles with that. We've had a few parents contact us because of the decrease in income for the people that that they support. For people that are were working at a high level, there's other opportunities available for them to do that, increasing volunteer opportunities for people, and creating meaningful opportunities in the community and expanding on a lot of things that we've been doing for years. So, again, big change. Not everybody in favor of it. It is consistent with the direction that we want to go and that is consistent with this board, with state, local, federal. You know, this is a shift that's happening, and you know, we're navigating our way through that and trying to provide meaningful alternatives to people as we make that shift. So then there's a list of kind of things to do that I'm not going to go through right now because I want to move on to... The only thing that I did on the very last page, on page 6 under business contracts, Brian's report indicated that DSC maintains subcontracts with local businesses and lists some of those relationships and references that some DSC workers receive subminimum wage, some DSC workers receive a competitive wage, temp workers receive competitive wage in order to meet production goals. And we do need to kind of navigate how we're going to move forward with that. The sentence that says some agencies are keeping their subcontracts as they are lucrative and produce income for the agency, the word lucrative just blows my mind. That's not the case. The intent has always been mission-driven to have work opportunities for people to develop some skills with the intent to eventually be working in the community. Some people have not made that leap. That's what we're focusing on. But the investment in business operations has been to promote work opportunities for people. And this, while it generates some revenue, what it does is offset the deficit in the inadequate rates from the state, just like fundraising and different funding and grants that we apply for. So lucrative might be happening in other parts of the country, but, you know, Illinois, and that one just kind of, That word, it was really hard. I almost asked him to change it, but it's real and it's his report. So, you know, there's a transition happening, and business operations is part of the changes that we're making. So, the FY17 program review that I gave you, again, just going to take a couple of minutes to highlight a couple of things there and let you do that at your leisure. If that's something that you want electronically, I can provide it. We have it in a PDF format. The mission changed in the last year that DSC supports people to live a rich and meaningful life. And to me, that just describes the ongoing commitment to support people as they move toward their own personal dreams and ambitions. And then talked a little bit about what Dr. Daig has done with us. And at the bottom of page one, just the community focus that we're furthering our efforts to establish more community-based options for people. Projects underway that more fully integrate people with disabilities in their community through work opportunities, enhancing volunteer opportunities, and still adhering to the most important aspect of individualized service, which is choice. This report looked a little bit differently and was more about agency and program goals than it was this format. This has been really well received because I think it tells a little bit more of a story about we still collect that information. And this references all the programs for the agency, and since the focus is on employment and transformation, I'm not going to go into a lot of that. So if you read that and have questions or comments, please let me know. But on the inside right panel, just when we look at residential services, I wanted to kind of wow you with a couple of statistics. 94,511 hours of support were provided in the SILA in FY17. That's the group home. That's the direct service. And when we look at a workforce crisis, a lot of that is overtime. A lot of that is overtime hours. And then we have two appointment facilitators that help to coordinate medical appointments for people in apartment services and in our SILA program. 769 scheduled medical appointments last year. And that doesn't take into consideration when somebody gets sick or has a serious medical situation and has to go to convenient care or is hospitalized. Those are our scheduled medical appointments. And then in the next section, I just thought it was kind of fun to notice that in apartment services, some of the goals, 12 people move to a new apartment or house and receive support. People experience new activities and hobbies, including vacations to Tennessee, Iowa, New York City, and Cancun. So they do get out beyond the state line. And they save money, and their jobs help to, put them in a position to be able to do that, and we do what we can to support those goals. Employment services at the bottom, in blue, you'll see over 100 people in the Community First Program and Competitive Employment Program, over 14,490 hours spent in the community in the last fiscal year. And then talking about employment, it is incredibly noteworthy to say that 22 of 23 people were still employed after 1 year of employment, which to me means that really good job matches are happening, that we really are basing employment opportunities based on people's interests and the strengthening those business relationships. 95% job retention is huge, and we've talked in here in the past that when we work with DRS, they consider a successful placement 90 days. That's kind of when their contract ends. And then DDB really supports the long-term support, and that's why so many people are, successful in their jobs. And, that doesn't mean that every single person is continuing to get that. If they don't need that support, we fade and they are on their own. So that obviously is the goal, so that we can serve more people. Developmental training, 206 people received services. And then there's some really good examples of the community focus that's happened. An average of 55% participation in supported employment and volunteering is a pretty significant change in our day program. So that's something I wanted to highlight. On the back page, personal interests, 97% of individuals in DT were involved in some community activities monthly, visiting over 370 businesses, organizations, and venues throughout the region. Activities range from several auto enthusiasts visiting the Chevrolet Hall of Fame Museum, attending a hot rod car show, animal lovers getting up close and personal at Miller Park Zoo, Aikman Adventures, Prairie Farms, and Hardy's Reindeer Ranch, music lovers touring WEFT radio station and attending folk and roots concerts, and visits to historical, cultural, and educational interests, involvement with YMCA, Leonard Center, Forum Fitness, Sholem Aquatics, and other local parks and sports facilities, small groups becoming regulars, and people going independently to places like Big B Coffee, Hardy's, Value Check, Old Orchard Bowling, Max Recycling, and Urbana Gardens. Those are based on interests, and groups are kind of pulled together to support that, usually two or three people at a time. They invite friends and make plans to do that. And then the introduction of the Next Step program that we talked about. As, when we talked about celebrating successes, the AIM, the Advocates in Motion, they've enjoyed their tour and continue to get requests for their presentation, the Expect the Best, which is what to ask for and expect from the support staff that work with them. Leaders in employing all people, you hear successes routinely about the number of businesses that are not just participating but are requesting to participate in that now. And then the prompting theater, the primary focus was filmmaking. In addition to Family Time, which received national recognition, the troupe continued honing its behind-the-scenes skills by exploring screenwriting, as well as camera, light, sound, production, directing, and editing. In the past, years and years ago, prompting theater was a stage presence with lots of support on stage, and that has shifted. And I remember the first time it was downtown that they hosted a show, and everything was through ear. And so they were up there on stage without the support, and that was a huge step. And now they're doing some films and entering contests, and have been recognized nationally. So it's really cool to have the community connections with other local theaters and other volunteers and stuff. So that has really grown and is something that people are really enjoying as it kind of evolves. So I think that it is about the stories. And I will tell you that Kim told me 20 to 30 minutes, so I'm sorry. Is everybody still with me? Okay, I'm going to go to a few stories. I've just got a few more minutes that I want to talk about, some community first and integrated all in FY17. Some I've already talked about. Our day program, I mentioned that McKinley 3 has discontinued work as of October 1st. I want to just share that we have a new program supported employment specialist in that program that has just completed her DSP training, which is the 40 hours classroom, 80 hours on the job training that has to happen before they can work alone with people, which is the state mandate. She has accomplished great things since October. I'm really impressed with the list. She's met with our employment services team, modified and expanded the job curriculum to work for people that will probably work initially in small groups versus independently. Developed a job club brochure, developed a calendar for prospective McKinley 3 job club participants, met with a few prospective employers, and will soon begin the discovery process with people in the program during December. So that's happening now. One person asked to join others in making Thanksgiving food baskets for families in need at the Vineyard Food Pantry. Someone else planned and executed an excursion to Kankakee in October to explore that community, eat lunch, and shop. She has a getting to know Illinois dream. And so she's inviting a couple of people to join her on some of her excursions. In the past, I know that there was a train ride to Rantoul. She always wanted to take the train. That was a nice, safe, short trip and an introduction to that. And then just identifying some things that she's interested in learning about. So it's really cool to see that expand outside just what her circle had been previously. People are volunteering at Salt and Light. They've gone through the orientation, and some are there each week. Someone else is going to start in December, and if you're familiar with Salt and Light, what happens is people volunteer there and they earn credit and then shop and are able to use that. So it's a way for people to give back and also earn some credits and get some things that help either in their, you know, in their own homes or in their personal lives. And so it's a really cool connection that's happening there. And we had one gentleman not too long ago that I think Annette talked about that decided that he wanted to do that after volunteering and dressed up and went and talked to the manager himself and secured a couple of days on his own and doesn't have any support there at all. So it is working. It is working. And, you know, again, years down the road, this is something that will be really fun to talk about in past tense because we'll have arrived and be looking forward towards something else. A new DT DSP has arranged a tour of Swan Special Care Center in order to identify volunteer opportunities there. Again, that would be something that would be cool to blend not only people with disabilities but also seniors and kind of work to gap and build some relationships there. Let's see. I'm gonna move down to what's happening in our employment services program. Community First participants have spent a total of 4,506.5 hours of their time in the community. There's also people that are non-TPCs, if you recall. Those are people that are not necessarily not DDB funded but benefit from the service, and so they get invited in, and we do let you know who those let you know that there are people involved, but they're not directly receiving DDB funding or services. There's a healthy cooking group. So all of these activities are, there's kind of a menu of options that, and it's a 12-week program, and people choose their top three, and then we try to pair them up with their interests so that they are participating in a 12-week program to learn about a special interest or a skill. So there's community activities, healthy cooking, MTD, Discover Illinois group, art groups, learning about different styles and methods of creating at the New Crow, enjoying learning about pop art, making their own paper, and currently working on a 6-person mural, building inventory. So the Enactus group has interviewed and filled a vacant position with a new team member and have orders coming in, learning the bus route to the Crow and soon be using MTD independently to get there. There's a Tai Chi pool group continuing to be popular, as well as book club, movie review, and bowling groups. The men's group continues to grow with participants volunteering in their community, helping people rake leaves. And that a couple of those led to a pizza party for with the families that they helped because they were really grateful. And so just kind of building some relationships and meeting new people. And they've included hosting a cookout at Clark for the employees there and painting the gazebo on our property. So that just happened recently. And then I talked about the Salt and Light. So a couple of stories that I'm going to share about actually placements in the community that have happened. And what I want to demonstrate is that this story is exactly how we'd hoped eFirst would work. So the collaboration and the grant that we have with Community Choices. There were the stakeholders that we talked about were businesses, the people that we're supporting, and then the other stakeholders. So the LEAP, we have one person, a local bank has gone through the LEAP program. They had already employed one person, and as soon as they went through the certification, expressed a desire to hire a second person for a unique opportunity. The parent and guardian attended the family meetings, and the person went through job club. So you see that all three of those things kind of happened, and it led to a placement for her. And it's really a cool So one of the banks here in town actually makes cookies for the guests, for the customers. And so she's making cookies now on site at the bank, and that's something that she helps to hand out to customers. And she loves baking, she's very social, it's been a good job match, and it's a nice customer service to the people that are coming to the bank. Another is somebody that recently has started attending job club and instantly saw an improvement in his hygiene, pride in his appearance, and his desire to work. You know, used to kind of show up a little bit disheveled and, life had gotten kind of routine, and he did it, you know, he did his job and came and did what he wanted to. But to kind of see that amped up a little bit, he's ready to venture out. His work ethic has improved greatly. He's established some volunteer opportunities to for us to learn his interests and work habits, for the employment specialist to observe interests and job readiness and employment exploration has happened, and there was a job lead that I heard about just yesterday for this person. So this is another kind of, you know, it's a process, and, you know, investing that time leads to a really favorable outcome. And for people that maybe a few even that in the past didn't even know they were interested. So the job club component has been a really good addition. And then we did hear from an employer in the community that sent an email to the employment specialist indicating that wanted to know how much positive feedback they're getting about the person there, that staff and volunteers have commented on how much they love the positive attitude and hard work and appreciate his participation, and also that they're happy to have him as a part of their team. So this is the same person that I was just talking about that, you know, was kind of feeling, I think, a little bit bored and not so ambitious, so it's nice to have that. And then the last one that I'm going to share is we have a gentleman that, again, I remember at the very first family informational meeting that we had, the very first one was at DSC, and it was just for people in our day programs to kind of let them know things are changing and this is what we're doing. And I sat down and talked to Dad, and he talked about wanting his son to have a job. Had never had one, didn't have one through high school transition, and had been at DSC for quite a long time. And so he was at the very first informational meeting, and I think he's been employed now for about 13 months. He started out with 4 hours a week, once a week at one store in town, and it's he's now up to 6. There's managers that have recognized him across the regional manager has shared, you know, his success and his services, and so he goes to several different stores. This is not Walgreens. And so about 6 weeks ago, I saw him and his dad at DSC, and he had just added another store earlier that day and was very excited about it. And then I had an email 2 days ago saying that they just added yet a 7th store. So some he's doing 2 in a day and doing some cleaning and, facing product on shelves and doing some cleaning and parking lot and stuff like that. So he's kind of going on tour doing that and building a pretty healthy schedule for himself and income. So at the end of that email, I think what I loved is that the employment specialist enthusiasm said, I believe that over time this kind of thing can happen for almost every person here. And so the buy-in is there, individuals, families, staff, the transition is lengthy. It takes a long time when you're doing something like this for one person at a time and also trying to manage 2 different kinds of service delivery. But I guess I also wanted to really highlight that the difference between DDB funding for the programs at DSC is the difference between somebody being a priority and somebody being on a waiting list. These people would not be getting services. They would be waiting for their name to come up on the state PUNS, on the PUNS pool for a lot of the services. And a lot of the people that we serve do not have family resources or family at all. So I guess as I step away or answer any questions, just really wanted to stress that what you're doing and what we're doing is making a difference every single day. And these are people that would go without service. So that's the path. That's the FY program review management report and a status update on the transition and the transformation that's happening that feels really good. So I don't know if there's questions or comments or.
I don't have a question. I'm just very happy to have this information. Seeing people actually moving into their own world is really, really good. Mm-hmm. So thank you for the information.
Thank you. And I just, it's also that these are things, a lot of this has been happening for years and years. I mean, we've had components of all of our services that have led to this, but there really is an emphasis on employment and day program and introducing opportunities to people that in the past didn't even know they had those interests. And a lot of times that's what leads to the success is you introduce them to ideas and they realize that they have more choices than they have. You broaden that perspective and the wants and desires get bigger. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Patty. It's really nice to hear what people are doing and how they're doing it versus just the numbers and so forth. Thank you. Okay, item 13, old business. Beginning on page 53 through 61, we have our proposed funding priorities for 2019. Is there a motion?
I move that we approve the priority.
Second.
Okay, discussion. Yes.
If I may, I'm not familiar with these, but were there any major changes from last year?
That was exactly my question.
Sure, go ahead.
So there's a draft that we presented, I believe, in October, which had it, you could see the changes from last year's document. And then I think we distributed it again, maybe in November, just to keep it in front of you. There were no changes in that draft. In this draft, there are two changes on page 56. They're actually, they don't really change the quality of the priorities at all. The changes are in the first paragraph. It used to say underserved populations and countywide access, and now we've added the word underrepresented, and we've also added a clause right after the Surgeon General's report on mental health, culture, race, and ethnicity. We've added, and according to the Federal Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. And the reason we added that is that Surgeon General's report is from 2001, and the only underserved populations referenced in that are African Americans and Latinx. And it is our experience in Champaign County. It was true also in the census, and expect it to be true in the next census, and it's identified in the SAMHSA website that there are more people we should think about when we're talking about underrepresented populations. The best example here are certain immigrant populations who are not receiving any services at all but may fully qualify and benefit. So that was the reason to include that. I believe some of the agencies are actually, you know, reaching those populations, so we want to make sure that that credit is given, and also that we recognize that that's important. May require translation services in some settings. The other change on this page is at the bottom of the page under budget and program connectedness. Again, it's not a qualitative change, but the Mental Health Board had some questions about our policy around indirect cost margins. And in the funding guidelines, which were approved in 2009, so they're also a little bit old, we identified an indirect cost rate maximum of 20%. But we also ask during the application process and then after, we ask a lot of questions about what the indirect costs are associated with. So we just made that explicit by adding the sentence, per the board's approved funding guidelines, rationale should be explicit, describing the relationship between indirect costs and the value of the proposed program. Those are the only changes since the draft you saw in October and November.
Okay, Dr. Hanley Maxwell had to leave for a meeting. I believe she probably most likely had some input for this document, so I'm not sure how we should proceed at this point. We do have a quorum.
To be fair to the agencies, we open the application system on January 5th, so it's really important that we have a statement of the priorities, and, you know, prior to January 5th. So if you're not comfortable approving this document without Dr. Hanley Maxwell, we would call a special meeting. If you are comfortable doing it without, we didn't have a conversation earlier about what her concerns might be. So if you are comfortable and you do have a quorum, you could vote on it. You could make any other changes that you feel are important at this point, or we could call a special meeting.
Does anybody have any input on that as to how to proceed?
Has she expressed any opinions about it? Well, then I think you should proceed.
I agree.
I think we should vote, and then if there's something significant that comes out from her, then we should make the change then. But I think we should go ahead and vote.
So we have a motion. And it's been seconded. Or was that, that was for discussion?
No, we're ready to vote.
Okay. So the motion is to approve the CCDDB program year 2019 allocation priorities and decision support criteria as described in this new memorandum. This requires a voice vote. Is that correct? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the motion is approved as presented. Item B under old business is the 2019 CCMHB funding priorities, which are presented for informational purposes only.
Okay.
Absolutely, Lynn.
And the reason that we like you to see this is that the Mental Health Board, this is an approved document. They're done with it. They have a priority for collaboration with the DD Board, and essentially it is to accept your priorities for the, I think it's roughly 17% of their total allocation dollars, but the way the intergovernmental agreement reads is actually to apply the levy increase to the amount of award of this current year. So the levy increase for the Mental Health Board is 4.5%, which is quite a big increase. I don't think that DD Board's increase is that is even close. But so that'll be nice for the programs that they're funding, which address DD needs.
Okay, item C. Is the included in the packet is the draft CCDDB three-year plan with FY 2018 objectives. It begins on page 71. I'd like to make a motion to approve the CCDDB three-year plan 2016 through 2018 with fiscal year 2018 objectives as presented.
I'll second.
Discussion? Okay. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion to approve the CCDDB three-year plan 2016 through 18 with fiscal year 2018 objectives is approved as presented. In the packet, we have agency first quarter 2018 reports beginning on page 80 going through 100. That's for informational purposes. Any comments? Also included at the back of the package on page 101 are the meeting schedules for both the DDB and the MHB meetings and the CCDDB allocation process timeline. As always, the LIGIS acronyms are provided beginning on page 105. Are there any board announcements? Does anybody have anything to add? So I
Happy holidays and Merry Christmas, or vice versa.
Thank you. So at this time, I'd like to propose that we adjourn. Make a motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you.